Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of, for the record, program number 702, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This program is being recorded on January 23rd of the year 2010. And once again, before I begin, please use the SpitfireList.com website, the best website for this type of information. There is a cornucopia, an ever-growing cornucopia of information of an anti-fascist nature, and there are books, there are incredible numbers of articles, there are incredible numbers of audio files. Essentially, my entire life's work is up there available for download for free. It's the best, it's the ultimate thing for these dire economic times. It is the best product. And sorry, folks, if it sounds conceited, it is the best product, and it is at the best price, free. So please take advantage of it. By the way, as I'm speaking on January 23rd of 2010, there is a new front page, slightly new format, ever better. Don't neglect, by the way, the supplemental section on the SpitfireList.com website. And a new feature beginning this week of the last week of January, for those who hear this on tape, there's going to be a new feature on the front page called Food for Thought, which will be just a single juicy article, which I'll update every day or every several days as circumstances permit, to sort of give you a preview of upcoming attractions and also to get these articles sort of out, so to speak, spread the word before I actually get a chance to produce a program. So SpitfireList.com is the website. Please use it. Well, here we are. A little over a year through Barack Obama's first term, everything is going to hell. In a handbasket, which really was as inevitable as the dawn. I remember telling people, and I've said it on this program, that essentially Obama had an impossible task. Two wars and a depression. No, not a recession, a depression. They just don't want to tell people. A public that is so dumbed down, and beyond that, just so immature and so thoroughly imbued with narcissism and selfishness and shallowness and materialism that it really is, it's questionable whether really it's not questionable. In my mind, America doesn't exist anymore. It's a great concept, and at some point in the future, I'm going to be doing a fireside chat about, among other things, not only the death of America, but what's going on is even beyond that. What is coming is the end of the Enlightenment itself. It is so huge and so foul that it's difficult to imagine. But a couple of concepts I'm going to be introducing, and I'll sort of use this as a teaser. This will be down the road. One is Zen patriotism, and the other is the Aeneas Brigade. And I can hear people going, what? What's that? What? Zen patriotism? What? And the Aeneas Brigade? Wait, he wants me to kneel down? I don't like kneeling down. I only do that when I pray. I mean, No, dear listeners, the Zen patriotism is an attitude that I think would be useful for adopting, not only to maintain good, effective civic action, but also to keep from going stark, raving bonkers in the face of what's coming. And the Aeneas Brigade, well, for those who can maintain Zen patriotism, because I'm afraid this country is dead, D-E-A-D, I think that really at this point, and I'm rambling a bit here, not the first time on these programs, but America at this point really is far more of a marketing concept than a nation state in the truest sense of the word. And in a subjective sense, it's kind of like a cross between a whorehouse and a theme park. And really, the country that I grew up in and grew to love and on whose behalf I've been fighting just doesn't exist anymore. It may seem strange to people listening to this, as fiercely critical of so many aspects of American political reality as I am, have been, and will continue to be. The motivation was basically to hopefully shed the light on these things, and naive as I now realize I was when I started half a lifetime ago, to hopefully effect some reform. But what the heck, you can't win them all. And sad to say, a lot of this research now is just being used for the wrong purposes. It's not being used to effect reform. It's just being used for America bashing and general hoo-ha. And that was not the idea. But again, one of Emery's fourth principle, you can lead a horse to water, But if the horse wants to back up to the trough, all you're going to be left with is a thirsty horse and a filthy trough. So keep that in mind. We're going to be looking at a number of articles in this. First of all, talking about Barack Obama and the fact that basically he isn't riding a tiger. He's riding a volcano that's about to erupt. And there was a very interesting op-ed piece called Global Insight in the Financial Times of December 3rd of 2009. A gentleman named Edward Luce penned this column, and he's pointing out how Barack Obama is just being skewered. Not that the guy walks on water or that he hasn't made mistakes, but again, he came in with two wars, two wars, a depression, and a bankrupt society, plus a bunch of bleeping morons for citizens. And not just bleeping morons, but selfish, immature morons at that. And that's just not real good, folks. And I don't think that the rest of the world is too bloody much better. That's for perhaps for some other time. But poor Barack Obama, and he's getting skewered from right and left. And for those of you who out there who may hear this, who voted for Ralph Nader, this one is for the Naderoids. By the way, somebody asked me, what's a Naderoid? It's like a hemorrhoid, only it's messier, more painful, and much, much less attractive. So you didn't think there was any difference between Al Gore and George Walker Bush. You didn't think there was any difference between the major politician most identified with green causes on the face of the earth and two petroleum industry CEOs from the state of Texas who were on the Republican ticket. So you wanted to vote green, huh? And you vote for Darth Nader. You don't think there's a difference? Something that really sort of highlights the contrast between the two of them. You know, Bill Clinton was no day at the beach, hardly. My view on Bill Clinton, basically, I would characterize Clinton in the same way that von Bismarck characterized Kaiser Wilhelm I when he said, quote, "He is like a cushion. He always bears the imprint of the last A blank blank that sat on him." And it pretty much characterizes Clinton, I think. People say there's no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. Oh, there's a big difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. It's like basically you're sitting down for dinner and you got two choices. And sorry, there are never going to be more than two choices. That's the way this country's government was set up. But you got a choice between two things. And the two plates, the two dinner plates, basically the Democrats are like a chicken fried steak dinner at Denny's, and the Republicans are a plate full of broken glass. Well, you're going to have dinner. Which do you want to eat? And if you can't tell the difference, certainly a chicken fried steak dinner at Denny's is not real good for you. Lots of cholesterol, lots of saturated fat, not a whole lot of nutrients, but it's a whole lot more desirable than a plate full of broken glass, which has no nutrients, and will cause you to die an agonized, terrible death. But anyway, that, as they say, is history. Something to which I really think, in a very sad way, contrasts what we had and what we got, and boy, are we going to get something else. Edward Luce, in his Global Insight column for the Financial Times of December 3rd of 2009, had the following, skipping down, talking about what Obama had to face as he came into office. The contrast with 2001 could not be greater. Then, Mr. Cheney and Mr. Bush inherited budget surpluses, near full employment, and a dollar whose reserve status was unquestioned. Following the attacks on New York, they were also greeted by a world that was prepared to go to the breach for an America that was viewed as the leader of the free world, unquote. A phrase now dropped almost entirely from the lexicon. How about that? Remember, the economy was actually in pretty good shape. And Al Gore was very pro-environment, very intelligent as well. And one of the many, many, many things that people should feel ashamed of as we look at it. It's amazing to watch. Well, of course, the Democrats have also behaved incompetently since getting in office. Keep your eye on Nancy. Nancy Pelosi's tied to the same Bormann / underground Reich elements that basically have spawned and continue to drive the Republican Party. They didn't spawn the Republican Party. They simply took it over and are using it as a vehicle for slamming America into a skyscraper. But the Democrats have behaved incompetently. But things, when you think back at the end of Clinton's second term, things looked pretty good, didn't they? It certainly, the country wasn't bankrupt. And we weren't at war at that point, not in so many words. And we had covert ops various places, but we weren't at war. And I'll guarantee you, if Al Gore had been in office, September 11th would not have happened. He wouldn't have reversed the Monarch Passage wiretap program on Bandar Bush and other Saudis. And when all of the warnings were flashing red in the summer of 2001, he wouldn't have headed on down to his ranch to clear brush. He would have been doing something about it. In fact, Al Gore was the point element for the Clinton administration attempting to bring the Saudis to heel on terrorism. Of course, Louis Free, who was head of the FBI, who is now Prince Bandar's defense attorney, and was in the Saudi camp all along. But just think back. Think back about how what things were like at the end of Clinton's second term. I remember telling people who were going to vote for Nader, and I said, if Bush gets in office and the forces behind him, you're going to look back on the Clinton years, and it's going to look like a golden age. It's going to look like high school. It's just going to look like a tremendously carefree, idyllic time. And they were saying, I don't buy that. And I also told them that if Bush got into office, and telling them explicitly what Bush was a front for, which was a Third Reich gone underground, you'll never see the light of day again. The damage that will be done to this country and to this world will be absolutely irreparable. And, check it out, folks. Check it out. Again, I think that column really sort of highlights the lonely road for Barack Obama getting tweezed between right and left. And, who knows what's going to come down. A couple of speculative items. I'm not at all sure that I'm going to have a chance to do a program about the Tiger Woods scandal. People are thinking, what? What does, you know, why is Dave talking about Tiger Woods? You know, well, I found it very interesting that as the Obama administration has gathered steam, that all of a sudden Tiger Woods, who was something of an idol to a great many people. I don't watch golf. In fact, I don't watch TV, period, and never thought a whole lot of golf. Tiger Woods, however, is the Babe Ruth of golf and has taken what is essentially a very boring sport and made it something of an item. Certainly put it on a lot of people's radar screens on whose screens it had not existed before. And I found it very interesting that all of a sudden the hounds of hell have descended on Tiger Woods. This is not to hold a brief for marital infidelity. This is not to say that Tiger Woods is an angel. He may very well have a sexual addiction problem. Not the only person in the world that has that, by the way. But all of a sudden, you know, watching them descend on Tiger, it reminded me of the O.J. Simpson case. And in fact, there's a cover story on the latest issue of Vanity Fair about Tiger Woods, and it appears that the picture has been darkened, rather like they did with O.J., and it talks about the fall from grace of Tiger Woods and compares this with the fall from grace of O.J. Simpson. I've done a lot of work on the O.J. Simpson case for all of O.J. Simpson's folly, and there was no shortage of that. He did not commit those murders, and beyond that, he was set up, and there were powerful elements of organized crime involved, elements of the intelligence community, and in particular, Nazi/white supremacist elements in turn connected to the underground Reich. The O.J. PSYOP, and that's basically what it was, I think had a lot to do with helping the Gingrich Congress get elected way back in 1994. And so when all of a sudden the hounds of hell descend on Tiger Woods, it set me to thinking. For one thing, there is a principle of psychology called stimulus generalization. And it's been a while since I went over this, but if you train a white rat to press a lever when it sees a red light, and then that delivers a food pellet into its cage, the rat will be inclined to emit that same conditioned behavior to a stimulus that more or less resembles the red light. For example, if a dark orange light is flashed, the rat will be inclined to press the lever, but not as much. And then if it's regular orange, again, the rat will continue to press the lever, but not as much. And if it's yellow, less, and so forth. In other words, it is a proven fact that mammalian nervous systems and cerebral cortices have a tendency to generalize stimuli. And one of the things that was striking to me about the Tiger Woods situation, the fact that here is Tiger Woods, who was something of an idol to a lot of folks. Heck, he was on Wheaties boxes, for crying out loud. And that's about as white as it get, folks. Tiger Woods, breakfast of champions, so to speak. And he was somebody who was not only viewed very positively, but he was a black person with whom whites felt very comfortable psychologically. And beyond that, and well beyond that, Tiger Woods was literally the Babe Ruth of golf. He was the man, so to speak. And golf is an extremely white bastion. Golf basically is a Swiss cheese sandwich on white bread with mayonnaise. Golf is white, folks. And Tiger Woods is not. And when you go down to the Augusta, Georgia, down to the Masters tournament, and you take the best white golfers and you put their A blank blanks down like they were a 2-foot putt on the 18th green, don't think for 1 minute this isn't going to arouse the hackles of a lot of people. And I note that the hounds of hell descending on Tiger Woods. Also note that the National Enquirer is leading the charge, much as they did against OJ. The National Enquirer is a very interesting publication. Its first publisher, Generoso Pope, was a, quote, ex-unquote CIA psychological warfare officer. And I noted that Tiger, remember back when Tiger first married Elin, his wife, Elin Nordegren, a Swedish woman, about as, quote, Aryan, unquote, as you're going to get. And boy, I wonder, because, man, the white supremacists, the Nazis, the Underground Reich, they do not like that stuff. The KKK, basically what amounts to an underground confederacy, doesn't like that. And I wondered, I said, how long is it going to be before something happens to Tiger? Well, it has happened, and a couple things I would note in addition to the fact that the National Enquirer, with Generoso Pope having a CIA psychological warfare background, is leading the charge. I also noted that a Swedish golfer who first introduced Ellen to Tiger is now sort of leading the charge, saying Tiger's no good and this, that, and the other thing. And I wondered about that. One of the things that I find interesting, too, and again, one wonders to what extent this whole thing might have been arranged and pre-scheduled, so to speak. Ellen Nordegren's mother is a woman named Barbro Holmberg. She is a powerful Swedish politician. And before I discuss a little bit about just what she is in charge of, which is immigration rights in Sweden, there are very, very strong links between the Swedish power elite, their industrial and financial elite, and those of the Underground Reich, and through that to the international cartel system that I've spoken about before. Hermann Göring, Reichsmarshal Hermann Göring, head of the Luftwaffe, had very strong connections to the Swedish power elite, and a number of very influential Swedish financiers and industrialists also were openly pro-Reich. Axel Wenner Gren of Electrolux, the well-known Electrolux brand, was a supporter of Hitler. Perhaps the most important was the Wallenberg family. Raoul Wallenberg was a member of that family who has had a lot of publicity for having attempted to broker the freedom of Jews at the end of World War II, and then allegedly, or perhaps really, having been held in prison by Stalin, or maybe perhaps killed right away. Who knows what happened to Raoul Wallenberg? I've heard different versions. But the Wallenberg family were basically in charge. They had their main industrial interest was they had a worldwide monopoly on the manufacture of ball bearings, and they were financed by their own bank, the Enskilde Bank. And, I've talked about that in past programs. The book Trading with the Enemy by Charles Higham has good discussion of the Wallenbergs and of their worldwide monopoly on ball bearings, and the possibility that William Batt of their American subsidiary may have deliberately betrayed to the Luftwaffe American Army Air Force plans to bomb the Schweinfurt ball bearing works in Germany. With that in mind, and again, this may be completely irrelevant, but I wonder about Aileen, the blonde-haired Aryan who got wronged by the nasty, sexually predatory, hyperactive Tiger Woods. Yuck! That's the way it's playing out, or that's the way it's being meant to play out on Main Street. Oh, by the way, before I leave the subject, to Rachel Uchitel, his first, I'm not going to have a chance to go into this just because there's so much going on, but Rachel Uchitel, his first accuser, from the Ukraine originally, worked for a bunch of apparent organized crime fronts, including some link to the Lansky syndicate, so who knows there. Was she tabbed to sort of start this thing? But something I found very interesting, Elin Nordegren, Tiger Woods' estranged wife, is the daughter of a very powerful Swedish politician named Barbara Holmberg, and we're going to read a little bit about her right now. Sweden has become something, despite its overt support for human rights, Sweden has become something of a haven for war criminals of various types, and you can probably guess one type that we're going to be coming to a little later. This is from a Pakistani publication, not jihadist as far as I can call it, the Dawn. This particular article reads, "War Criminals Shelter in Sweden's Legal Limbo." It's by Stephen Brown. Highlighting one excerpt, and I'm going to read more of it. Amnesty International's Carl Soderberg said there was a legal limbo, unquote, in Sweden for fugitive war criminals. Immigration Minister Barbro Holmberg said Ovebro's estimate was an exaggeration, unquote, but there was a small number, unquote, of war criminals in Sweden kept under surveillance all the time. Barbro Holmberg, the immigration minister of Sweden, is Elin Nordegren's mother. She's Tiger Woods' mother-in-law. How'd you like to have a mother-in-law who's the immigration minister of a country that is sheltering war criminals, huh? Interesting. Maybe just irrelevant, maybe only too relevant. It's what I call food for thought and grounds for further research. Again, this article from the Dawn of April 6th. The date I'm going to have to find some other time. Actually, this is April 16th of 2005. This is before Tiger's problems began. Yes, 4/16/2005. Article by Stephen Brown, War Criminals Shelter in Sweden's Legal Limbo. It reads in part, "War criminals and human rights violators from Afghanistan, Africa, and the Middle East and the Balkans find refuge in Sweden, where they are protected from repatriation and never prosecuted," officials and activists say. A respected voice on human rights, which is quick to denounce abuses abroad, Sweden was one of the most vocal European Union members, demanding in March that Croatia find war crime suspect Ante Gotovina before starting negotiations to join the EU. But Sweden itself has only one policeman investigating human rights abusers who have found refuge on its own soil. He reckons as many as 1,000 live here, protected from deportation by a UN convention and with little risk of being brought to justice. Quote, "If someone sits down and goes through the immigration files, he or she will easily find several hundred or maybe 1,000 potential war criminals," Detective Superintendent Hans Ovebro, the Swedish police's one-man war crimes unit, told Reuters. And skipping ahead, you can imagine, in addition to people from, all over, people from Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, Africa, Afghanistan, the Balkans, guess who are among those groups? I mean, anybody who's listening to this program could pretty much fill this one in. Skipping down, Sweden has never in modern times put anyone on trial for war crimes. It angered Jewish Nazi hunters at the Simon Wiesenthal Center by refusing to investigate 100 to 200 suspected Baltic Nazi collaborators who fled here after World War II. The country was bound by a 25-year statute of limitations on all crimes, which it plans to drop soon under a 1998 Rome Treaty scrapping such limitations for crimes against humanity. And once again, Amnesty International's Carl Soderberg said there was a, quote, legal limbo in Sweden for fugitive war criminals. Immigration Minister Barbro Holmberg, parenthetically, Tiger Woods' mother-in-law, said Overbro's estimate was an exaggeration, unquote, but there was a small number, unquote, of war criminals in Sweden kept under surveillance all the time. Well, hot dog for that, I guess one could say. Are we being presented with a psyop? Is this intended to affect stimulus generalization? Are white folks in this country who were very comfortable with Barack Obama, a black man, are they being shown another ostensibly idyllic white black man with whom they could feel comfortable? All of a sudden finding out that he's a lousy husband and he's been stepping out on his pretty blonde wife. I mean, just yuck. That's the way I think this one is meant to play out. Is this a psyop of some kind? I don't know. But it gives off a peculiar odor, and that odor is of something warm and brown, and there's plenty of it around, and more all the time, so it would seem. Another totally speculative item. And again, I've had people asking me and emailing me, do I think the Haitian earthquake was deliberately precipitated? I don't know. Haiti is a very, very tortured country. It has really been abused pretty thoroughly for hundreds of years. And I think one of the reasons Haiti has endured the special ire of the white neo and post-colonial world is that Haiti was the second colony to gain independence. We were the first, folks, and even though we've become a world power, I think we are headed down the tubes, and I think that was planned for a long time. Not only do I think the United States, even if it remains geographically intact, is essentially doomed, if not already dead, but what's coming is the end of the Enlightenment itself, a time so terrible and so unthinkable, so unspeakably evil that, well, all I can say is stick around and you're going to see it. But I was asked about Haiti, and Haiti under Toussaint Louverture basically threw off its French colonial masters. Haiti was a slave colony, and Toussaint Louverture, the leader of the Haitian slave rebellion, whose guerrilla warfare tactics, by the way, are a mandatory study subject for most military academies, including West Point, according to report. I don't think they've ever forgiven the Haitians for doing that, boy, kicking out the European colonial masters. Bad enough when America did it, and America's going to get it. Actually, we're getting it now. But when a bunch of dark folks do it, when a bunch of black slaves kick out the European armies, that is heresy, folks. So certainly, vis-a-vis the Haitian earthquake, a lot of black folks are dead. It is also sucking still more aid out from an already bankrupt country. In terms of the amount of aid compared to what has gone in other directions, the $100 million or so the U.S. has staked out is really pretty small. But I've heard people saying, why are they sending $100 million over there? You know, we need help here. And kind of a small-minded way of looking at things, also sort of ignorant. $100 billion does sound like a lot to the average citizen, but compared to the billions spent in other directions, not really all that much money, but I don't know. I would note that there was a treaty about environmental warfare, including the precipitation of earthquakes and related phenomena such as tsunamis, that was signed by the U.S. and the former Soviet Union in the late 70s. Other countries now, apparently, are also developing or have developed capabilities like Project HAARP, about which I've spoken so many times in the past. So there may very well be other countries that can do the same thing. I would also note that who knows who's running Project HAARP? It was at one point under the direction of E-Systems, which was betraying some of America's most secret technology to the Saudis. So who knows? Again, the United States is really more of a cross between a theme park and a whorehouse at this point, rather than a true nation state. And pretty soon it's going to be like a cross between a theme park, a whorehouse, and a concentration camp at the rate that we're going. I simply want to note the following in that regard. About Haiti, I don't know. But a Times of India article from December 17th of 2009 has noted that in Switzerland, there is a fellow who has been indicted for causing earthquakes. A geologist on trial for causing earthquakes while drilling for hot rocks to produce clean energy said he was surprised by the strength of the most powerful trembler. Marcus Herring, who designed the geothermal project, rejected charges that he deliberately damaged properties and said locals knew the risks. The deep drilling underground caused a series of earthquakes in 2006, including one of 3.4 magnitude, rattling residents in this northwest city of Basel. So, I don't know. Is it possible that it's part of another PSYOP intended to get people all embittered at the black president sending money abroad to those black people outside? You know, when we need help here, I do not know. And it is, and I know people have looked at me like I was nuts when I talked about earthquakes being triggered. Well, now we've got a guy in Switzerland who's under indictment for triggering earthquakes. We're going to continue with miscellaneous articles and updates, but we're going to have to do so on side two because this concludes side one of For the Record program number 702 being recorded on January 23rd of 2010. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.